Stay tuned for your 3CR podcast, featuring interviews from Bundles Fire Radio Show. 3CR is an independent community radio station in Fitzroy, Victoria, on the unceded lands of the Kulin Nation. For more information, go to www.3cr.org.au. Yeah, that's Neil Murray, Broken Land, all the way from the Lake Bolac Eel Festival over the weekend. He's performing there. It was a great weekend, and got talking about history around that area, including the Budgerim, which ancient eel traps there. It's connected to all that, the eel dreaming. But also, Budgerim has the oldest known houses on this planet. They existed right up until about 1970. I remember they bulldozed them. They didn't want any evidence of Aboriginal people having that sort of sedentary lifestyle. You know, that didn't fit their description of Aboriginal people. And they destroyed those amazing places that housed up to 30 to 40 people. Stood there for such a long time. You know, these went way back, as far back as those eel traps went. Anyway, that's the story of Australia. Welcome to the fire. Straight up, I want to introduce you to my dear friend Aku, who's been campaigning against the demolition of the 44 towers. Check out 44FU. I think that's a page of yours. Is that a page on internet? Internet.
We've got a page on Instagram, and good thing you asked, Unc, because our new website has just gone live. There's not too much on there, but it looks better than the previous page, okay, which was just like a generic page that we just had with contact details on it. So we've got a website now as well. That's 44fu.org, and our Instagram as well, which is 44_flatsunited.
So how long have you been aware of the demolition and the plans for it?
I guess since the announcement was made, or like about a month after the announcement was made by Dan Andrews.
Is that about a year now?
Three years. September 2023 was when he announced it on national television before residents were even told individually. He announced it on TV, and that's how everyone found out about the demolition plans. It's been 3 years, and it's felt like it feels like a lot longer sometimes. We've been doing a lot of work in this space day in, day out.
Well, you're going to give us a bit of an update of what's been going on.
Go
for it.
It's been a while since I've been on the show, and a lot has happened. But just circling back a little bit to what you were talking about earlier with the stone houses at Budgerim in the 1970s and how they were demolished, I was actually, I joined Tony Birch's walking tour yesterday because it's, I think this month marks 20 years of shadow boxing. Okay. And he had a small tour on yesterday, and it was really cool. Yeah, we walked around Fitzroy to different spots that he wrote about in shadow boxing in his new book, Women and Children? He read out excerpts from shadow boxing, and we spoke about his book. We spoke specifically about the slum clearances that he lived through in the 60s, in the 50s and 60s afterwards. And he mentioned to me that when people's homes were demolished, oftentimes they'd just go out in the morning and they'd come back and their house would be flattened and all their possessions would just be in like a pile there, and you sometimes couldn't get things out. But he was saying that what happened and what replaced them, obviously, was the Housing Commission high-rises. And I didn't know this, but if you wanted to move into Housing Commission back then, like his family, I think, so his family were affected by it, but if you wanted to move in to public housing back then, you had to comply with 337 regulations in order to live there, and that dictated how you lived and how you conducted yourself on the estate. So it's very interesting. I think there's a lot to learn. And sorry, I should also say that there's a lot of research that talks about the resistance to the demolition of these homes as well.
There'd be a lot of Aboriginal people wouldn't have been able to comply to those 300 regulations. And, we didn't fare very well in terms of public houses. It's always been difficult for our people.
Tony mentioned that a lot of people just couldn't comply and didn't want to comply with
My mother grew up in that area too.
I know that. And it was her birthday yesterday, wasn't it?
It was her birthday yesterday. Yeah. Happy birthday, Mum, yesterday.
Happy birthday, Auntie Alma, beautiful. 91.
Beautiful day yesterday too. It was lovely weather.
It was so nice, yeah.
Mum lived through those depression times here, and there's a good film to watch called Ablaze that gives you it's called Ablaze.
Okay.
I think it was made by Ricky Onus. Oh, his father actually made it, and he's updated it sort of thing and brought it.
Yeah. Do you know what year?
I'm not
roughly. 100%. Oh, we'll look it up.
To Ricky Onus, Ablaze. Yeah. And it gives you an insight of the conditions of Fitzroy back in them days.
So yeah, that would be great.
Worth looking at, yes.
Maybe we should screen it at your flat, Unc.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that sounds great. It was, here it is.
Gone?
I'm trying to, I'm just looking, Googling it, but the details aren't here.
Yeah,
it's in black and white, so it's old.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yes. we'll find the details of it.
Amazing story. Yeah, and Mum, they didn't know a lot of the people who appeared in that doco, but Mum knew them all.
Yeah, so wow.
She let them know who they were. You know. She grew up in that era. Yes.
Yeah, we're going to be starting a campaign, an online project actually, 44 of you on our Instagram, and it's going to be called Living Legacies. And it's not to commemorate the flats. It's definitely not that. It's not to mourn the loss of them, because that's so far. It's not where we're at. We are fighting this, and we believe we're going to win. But the project Living Legacies is to reflect on the significance of the land that the flats sit on, and the significance and the role that they've played for all the generations that have lived on there, starting with Aboriginal people, and what we've spoken about, what you've shared with me before, last year in an earlier program, about the how sacred those spaces were for Aboriginal people who've been kicked off missions to come and to find each other, and just to support one another and organise. You've talked about your mum a lot before as well, and how she started up the Aboriginal Health Services, which was so important and integral to maintaining Aboriginal people's health back then and ongoing as well. Is that right, Unc?
Absolutely, yes. Aboriginal people gravitated to Fitzroy because it was a place where we could actually live here. Like, it was a ghetto, so that was okay for Aboriginal people. And being kicked off the reserves at that time, and the forced assimilation into the wider community, they were closing the reserves. So this is a place where we recreated a community out of nothing. There was nothing here. And we fought back, and Aboriginal Health Service and other organisations, even before that, developed here. And kept us together as a community. And there was groups from all over the place, all different mobs, gravitated here. Similar to what happened in Redfern as well. So they were, amazing spaces, community, political communities they end up being. And started the fight back of our rights, I suppose, in a sense, political organisation. A very important Fitzroy, Redfern, South Brisbane, these communities.
Yeah. There's you were part of the Yallanguth tour last year as well, and that's an app that people can download, and they can do the walking tour to learn a bit more about the Black Mile and the history, the political history of that space as well in Fitzroy and Atherton Gardens.
Have you heard that? Have you done it?
I did it. Last year when we did that.
I've never heard it myself.
When you presented at it?
Oh, I presented it.
I haven't actually listened to the app either. We just did the live tour.
Yeah. That's more information you can have there about organisations at that time. And some we were just talking about, the fight back of Aboriginal people from basically, we're the phoenix rising from the ashes here. There's nothing left of Aboriginal society. It was pretty mostly destroyed in probably the first 30 years of British colonialism here. Reserves and, it's an incredible fight back. It's not over yet.
It's not looking great either. Like, public housing isn't perfect. Like the estates aren't perfect, and you'll be the first to talk about the problems that exist there. But that's no reason to knock down and destroy public housing. The alternative that the government's proposing and has already built is what's called community housing. And the government, the Department of Family Fairness and Housing and the housing minister always conflates public housing with community housing. And they do that, they're able to do that by using the term social housing. So the parliamentary inquiry that happened last year into this decision to demolish all 44 flats, which is where I met you, Unc, when you walked into the room and we were presenting, that inquiry released a report in December, and you and I spoke at it at the front of Parliament at the end of last year. And in that report, there was a recommendation that the state government, Department of Family Fairness and Housing, that people stop using the term social housing because it's inherently misleading. The Department of Family Fairness and Housing in Homes Victoria, we know this from talking to residents that have been relocated, will go to meetings with residents who they want to relocate, like for whose property they want to demolish, and will tell them that they've got this, their options now, they're usually given two options, is to move into the buildings across the road. If they're in, Richmond and Flemington, they happen to be across the road. So they were telling them, look, we've built new social housing for you, move in across the road, and it's exactly the same. But it's not the same. There are some fundamental differences between community housing and public housing. And I guess one of the most concerning things is that in public housing, as you would know this just from neighbours as well, it's incredibly difficult to evict someone. And that's good because public housing is usually housing of last resort in Australia. And thank God we have it because it's a safety net, and it means that people will have people who are low income or don't have jobs have access to housing, which is so fundamental for everything else in life.
Isn't it a human right to have shelter and things like that?
Right? No. Yeah. Yes. So your risk of being evicted is much higher when you move to community housing. And we know that through talking to a lot of people who've worked in the sector and who've worked in homelessness spaces as well. A lot of people would much prefer to have their clients end up in public housing because the rate of eviction is so much higher in community housing. So it's not looking good. In terms of what the state government's hoping to do, which is to get rid of public housing and replace it with community housing and affordable housing, which isn't actually affordable. It's only 10 to 20% less than the market rate. And if market rates keep going up, it's definitely not going to be affordable for people on lower income, at medium income. So yeah, it's very precarious, and some things have happened recently, and maybe I'll share this in a moment, in the community housing space within the inner city of Melbourne, which are really important to know about and we can learn from, because it's an indication of how precarious housing will be if you get moved into community housing.
So where are we now? How does it look for I know some of the flats have been demolished or emptied out for a start.
So the red bricks, the Elgin Street, Elgin and Nicholson Street in Carlton, there were two red brick buildings there, and they were public housing. As I understand it, this is a few years back, there was a decision to to move people out and to demolish them. That decision was made before Dan Andrews' announcement to knock down all 44. But there was an arrangement in place, and my understanding is that there was political pressure put on the state government and the federal government, I think by the Greens, to reinsure that when they were demolished, that they would be re-erected as public housing.
And did that happen?
So they've just been demolished. You can go and have a look at the site now.
It makes a bit of a mess too.
Yeah,
these places.
Are
they dangerous in terms of their messes?
It's interesting, right? There's so that block itself. I've been over there, and I know some people that live there. if they look out their window and there's a demolition site right outside their window, and it's really disruptive, is what I've heard.
Yeah,
living
noisy.
There.
The noise.
Yeah, start. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's day in, day out too. But those have come down, and the commitment originally was that they would be rebuilt as public housing. And there's a clip of Harriet Shing, the housing minister, that I think she put on her Instagram just a few days ago. I haven't looked at it, but I think she talks about rebuilding them, and she uses the term social housing. So she's doing what the Parliament inquiry was recommending they stop doing, which is using the term social housing. So it's actually unclear if they're going to be rebuilt as public housing.
So sneaky, these people.
So sneaky. And what's really, well, shouldn't be surprising at all, but they've continued this process today. So I'm not sure, I think you know this, Unc, but in January this year, just a couple of months ago, the state government announced the seven new buildings that they want to demolish, that they're going to demolish. So they're calling that tranche three. There's been two tranches before, and one of those tranches was the one that included 139 Hyatt Street in Richmond on your estate. So in tranche three, they announced this at the end of January, and all of those buildings are older person buildings. So that's people who are over 55. They were built purposefully for older residents to live in, so they could have quiet enjoyment of their space, and they could form, I guess, so that all the support services they needed as older people could be catered to them in one place, and for them to create a community that they felt safe and comfortable in. Those buildings, so there's 13 older person buildings of the 44 in Melbourne, 13 of them are designated older person units. And the idea is that when one person moves out, or if they pass away, that is backfilled by another person who is over 55, because they there's a priority list for people in the housing register who are over 55 as well. So it should get backfilled by people who are over 55. What any of that now means, because these buildings are at risk of being demolished, who knows? And who knows what's going to be built in their place? But if it's anything like what's happened before, it'll be rebuilt as community housing and private housing. And I guess there's probably conversations to be had about what, like, who will end up living in these buildings, but it's definitely not going to be private housing. Public housing. But I guess so we've gone out, 44 of you have gone out to all seven buildings now in tranche three. That's, I think, 600 units in total across those buildings. And we've spoken to a lot of residents, and the very first thing the people say to us is, why us? Like, why are they targeting older people? Why? It seems so intentional now. Is it because they think that we're not going to do anything, that we're just going to sit back and let it happen, and that they find it really insulting? And some people have called it elder abuse as well, because okay. They genuinely are fearful of the, like, they cannot move out. They're too old to physically move all their things. And this isn't just a one-time move.
Is it because they think it's much easier to attack these elderly people? Yeah, well, it's out.
That's what they think. That's what residents think, Unc. Yes, they can't help but think that. They think that the state government are targeting them because they think they won't / can't do anything about it. And it's wrong. It should not be happening.
Maybe they bit off the wrong one there, I think. I'm pretty sure the old people will have a go back, you know, and that they know what's going on. And
absolutely.
So, yeah, maybe the wrong move by the state there.
If anyone was paying any attention to this campaign over the last 2 years, some of the most vocal people have been people over 55, have been people who are over 60. People are smart. They have time. They do a lot of research and reading. They ask all the right questions, and they know what's going on. So I agree with you, Unc. I don't think it was the whole plan is a poor decision, to say the least. But, yeah, I think it's deeply insulting that they chose older people, and yeah, of course people are going to believe that it was targeted and intentional because they think they're not going to do anything about it.
I heard that there was court cases.
Yes.
Going on at the present time.
Yes.
Know much about them?
I just spoke to Louisa from Inner Melbourne Community Legal Centre, who's representing Jason Mallard, who's the lead plaintiff for the class action. So he lives in the Flemington estate. So he's part of, tranche one, which had three high-rise buildings in it. They were the first that the state government wanted to empty and demolish. So they've been running this this class action for the last couple of years. And Louisa said that we should get an outcome from the, it's in the High Court now, and we've got, I think we've put in the application for, I think it's called special leave, so an appeal essentially, and we've put in that application. We should hear an outcome in the short-term future, over the next couple of months, I think. So no immediate outcome yet, but one of the outcomes, I guess, of that process after the appealing the Supreme Court decision is that the judges agree that there would be an injunction against evictions of tenants who are in that first tranche in North Melbourne and Flemington. The interesting thing though, Unc, even though there's this injunction against evictions, we've been speaking to residents in tranche one, and we have heard at least of one case where a resident was threatened with eviction, threatened with court action if this person didn't move out. And this person didn't have legal representation or anything like that. But it's very interesting that the court can make a decision, but what's actually being told to residents on the ground is very different. And it's not surprising because, as the parliamentary inquiry found, and not just the inquiry, but as residents have been saying for the last 2 years, they are being bullied and coerced into moving out, into signing these relocation forms and getting moved out. So it's not a surprise, but that should not be happening. And I guess... Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting because we've learnt a lot in the last 2 years of how Homes Victoria conduct themselves. And it's going to be very interesting because they're not going to be able to get away with as much this time because residents are getting clued up now. And I guess that's what we've been doing at 44 FU. Now that we're across all seven buildings, it's a big education campaign. And the more residents find out about what has happened so far and what they're being proposed, which is all community housing. If you're in Albert Park, they want you to move into the Barrack Beacon Estate, which is down the road, which is all community housing. Well, there's a part that's community housing. The rest is private and affordable. Or if you're in Paran, they get you to move to the South Yarra community housing buildings. But they're pushing you to move into community housing and they're not making it clear what the difference is. And when it's put to them, the answers are, again, very vague. And it's not good enough, but they can't get away with not answering questions for much longer because residents are going to get frustrated and they already are. They've started to organise. In St Kilda, residents there have gotten together and there's a petition now going around and there's 25% of residents have signed it now and it's going to increase.
That's cool.
And people are talking to each other. Yeah.
Yes.
It's exciting that,
he's done a fantastic job, RQ, like campaigning for the last 3 years. And,
I was speaking.
Thank you for that.
All
your crew.
Well, so many residents have come together already and spoken out, tried to support one another, spoken to media, to the parliament, to other across the states as well. And it's all important. And I think it's just really, it's all important work. Everything that everyone does so far has been incredibly vital. But, you know, we're up against the state government and we're up against their...
Very sly they are. I know because I live in the high-rise commission flats down there in Richmond. Mm. See what's going on.
Yeah.
And,
treated
very poorly, you know. And it's, the other thing, it's breaking up these, you know, these communities that have been together for a long time, you know, and shift them into spaces where they're not comfortable. They're breaking up their communities.
It's
a form of dispossession and dislocation.
It is.
We're also familiar with.
Which is interesting because you can juxtapose that against what we were at on Friday. So you and Belgium Avenue Neighbourhood House, shout out to Lydia and Sally for putting that on. You put on such a fantastic...
And Sunny, yeah.
Oh, cool. I don't know. Okay, yes, Sunny, and yeah. Sunny as well. That was incredible, Unc. That was such a beautiful festival.
Yes, it was.
And that was on the estate. It was opposite 139 Hyatt Street there on Belgium Avenue. And even though it was raining, it was just such a good day of community coming together and all the good food. And you performed as well and your band played.
We're going to do more of that, like we're talking about, because it's bringing all that community together. And, you know, it's so diverse, the community there in Richmond.
Yeah.
I think it's really beautiful. It's going to get broken up because of the demolition of these places. potential demolition.
That's right. Yeah. did you know that your estate's the largest public housing estate in Australia, if not someone, I can't remember who mentioned this, if not the
Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
I don't know about but
definitely in Australia.
Definitely in Australia, yeah. And
yeah.
Such a beautiful community too. I've really grown warm to it over the time that I've been there. And
yeah, so lively. There's so much going on all the time. Yeah. And yeah, so there's 5 high rises on your estate, and then 13, I think, walk ups. So it's huge, and yeah, unfortunately, 139, they've really emptied that out.
That's
now.
1,000 units, is it?
Across the estates.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess
200
each.
Each.
Yeah, 200, 220. Yep, that's right. 1,000 units, and so that's, and a lot of them are 2-3 bedrooms as well. So you've got like probably 3 to 5,000 people living on that estate, which is huge. And I remember as a kid, I'd go there. We've got family friends that live there, and Operation Stitches, which was this religious program, but they gave us free toys and free food, so it was good. We put on festivals for us, and we'd get bussed over to the Richmond Estate and participate in all the holiday programs, and it was so much fun.
Yeah.
And I guess that's one of the
good
reasons,
memories.
Such good memories, and that's one of the reasons why we fight so hard for public housing as well, is because they've been such special places, important and integral spaces for people who are firstly First Nations people, like you've already mentioned the role that it's played in terms of like providing some form of housing. And yes, it could be so much better, but at least there is some form of housing and there's some housing security there.
That was the only sort of housing we would get, but it was difficult even to get that. But
yeah,
what that was the best chances we had.
And what do you know what the alternatives were, Unc? Like if your place was knocked down as part of slum clearance, you if you complied with all 337 regulations, you could then live in public housing and housing commission.
We didn't have houses back then either. We all live in boarding houses and places like that.
Yeah.
So it was really difficult.
Yeah.
Hardly any average people had houses. They'd be rare as hen's teeth.
Yes. Yeah.
No, that can't answer that question,
But what we do know is that a large percentage of Aboriginal people live in public housing, and like successive groups of migrant refugee populations have called these estates home as well, and including my family, who are refugees from Vietnam. So it's so important. And I guess also with the way it looks like we're heading in the world as well, there will be more displaced people, and there will be a higher need for public housing as more people, well, if it is the case, if we do accept more asylum seekers and refugees as well, these are really important places for them, like this housing in the inner city where you have access to all the support services you need, all good education, other community events, and not just that, I think this is an often overlooked thing, but there are these internal economies. Tony Birch talked about this yesterday as well, when it was before the estates existed there were these internal economies that were self-sufficient, more or less. People would support each, like people would babysit each other's kids, loan each other money. If your car broke down, your neighbor could fix it for you. Like they are their own internal system, and it does mean that you rely on external support less. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't lean on the welfare system at all, I'm not saying that, but people are innovative and creative, and it works. It's a system that works. And
well, we had to do that sort of thing back in the day here growing up in Fitzroy. We had to create our own services and things like that under duress and difficulty, but we did those things, and the community is the best bet at the end of the day every time. But we're entitled to those other things as well, so
That's why I feel so privileged working so closely with you, Unc. I learn all the time through all of your stories about what it actually means to organize in community and the significance of that. And often it's not because you choose to, it is the only option that there is available. So it's been a real privilege to learn firsthand how you did things and how you continue to
And one of the good things we do, we give people a break. So I'm going to give you a break so you can get a chance to have a breather.
Yeah, nice. Yeah,
and cool. We'll come back.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
Welcome back to Bunjil's Fire, everybody. My name is Aku and I'm from 44 Flats United, and I'm joined with by Uncle Robbie. It's his show, obviously, he's here. But we just wanted to do a shout out to 3CR and an upcoming event to celebrate 50 years of community radio, of 3CR specifically. It's going to be on the 4th of July at the Collingwood Town Hall from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's to celebrate 50 years of 3CR. So everyone should come down. There'll be music, stores, food, prizes, and it's free entry as well. And there's some limited edition merch for sale too, which will be fun. But
that's,
yes, come
that's
on
That's going
down.
To be a fantastic day, I think. So well worth it. You know, I think 3CR is the oldest community radio in Australia.
That's so cool.
So that's an amazing story here. So look, really looking forward. 4th of July, folks.
Yeah, it's not that far
down at Collingwood Town Hall.
So cool.
So we got 43 minutes past 11, Aku, and you're going to continue on your
there's a few more updates.
Campaign.
Yeah.
What else we got there?
Well, some interesting things have happened in the last couple of months here in Melbourne in around community housing, and I mentioned it earlier. So, and why it's interesting is because it, again, just spells a really clear picture, paints a really clear picture of what like a raw deal community housing actually is. And we already know it because the people that live in community housing and affordable housing are really not happy with where they are and they feel stuck. Lots of people actually want to be moved back into the public housing system, and they're told that, well, they have to rejoin the housing register, and the wait time is on average at least 10 years. So people... Exactly. And if you're an older person as well, like if you're, and this is the case, there are a lot of people we've met who are in their late 80s, they don't have the ability to move again. Like moving that first time from the high rises over broke a lot of people, and their mental health has deteriorated because they're no longer with the...
Well, if you're 80, how's 10 years going to... affect you, you know, you're back in there when you're 100 years of age, you're not going to even live that long, so that's...
It's awful.
That's awful.
It's so awful. Actually, David Kelly, the researcher, sent to me a really interesting article this morning. There's three things I wanted to touch on, so I'll try to make sure I touch on all of them before we wrap up the show today. But yeah, he sent me an interesting article, and it comes from New York, from Chelsea, and I think there was some... maybe the equivalent of a class action that was taken against, I believe it was the council, because they wanted to demolish also an older person's building. And a lot of the residents there have pushed back and they've appealed it, and they've actually successfully won the appeal. So they're pausing that demolition. It's a block of, I think it's eight different high rises in Chelsea, and it's called NYCHA. But yeah, if people want to look into that, there could be some lessons to be learnt there. But I guess why it was really lovely to wake up to that message from David this morning is it shows that you can actually stop this thing from happening, and residents around the world, in New York anyway, in this case.
We want to hear more about that, how to do this, right?
Yeah.
It's overwhelming, really, for a lot of people, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, and there's the legal avenue, which is great when it works, because and even in terms of like the class action in Melbourne specifically for this issue, it has been really helpful to have that class action there. It's meant that there is that injunction against evictions now. But what we know for certain is that what needs to happen for any resistance to be successful is community, as you said before, Unc. That is the bread and butter of anything changing in any tangible way.
That's
people
true.
Getting organized together, yes. And learning from one another and educating each other.
Just on organizing, is it possible to organise a soccer match or a football match between the towers? I'm pretty sure we'd all have a team.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be mad? We could organise it somewhere and...
Yeah, that would be great. There are teams on each of the estates. I don't know much about them, but there are definitely these young, like soccer clubs for young people. I can't remember. I think it's called the Fitzroy Lions that organise some of the games. I'm not sure, but there are. We should do more of them.
Some sort of comp between the towers.
Yeah,
they have a barbie and some bands or something like that.
They did. They did play on Friday out in the on the lawn. Yeah, outside 139.
So they're enjoying themselves.
We should do more of that. In fact, maybe what we should do instead is actually Homes Victoria should have a team, and then the kids get to play Homes Victoria, and then if they win, because they will, because they're very good. They don't demolish the flats anymore. That might be good.
You're
that's a better
there.
Game. Well, the kids are really good at soccer in the flats.
You have a boxing match too or something.
That, I would partake in that if I was bestie in Victoria. Yeah, no, but boxing was a big part of the culture for kids. You've told me a lot about this. I think you should tell the audience a bit more about, the role of boxing for kids
back
in the 70s.
It's fantastic. Yeah, we had our own we created our own youth club and gymnasium, and it was so well attended by a lot of the people from Fitzroy flats in particular. They all loved it. They couldn't get enough of it. But like what happens to our organisers, they get closed down, controlled and dominated by the, they started off independent, but when they become, bigger, the government wants to fund and incorporate them and then control them, and that's the end of them.
There's a similar thing relevant to this on the Fitzroy Estate as well. We've been talking to some people who organised against what was happening in the Fitzroy Flats back in 2013. So there was a residence group there called the Atherton Gardens Residents Association, and it was all residents, and they would provide support programs for residents on the estate. But they launched a big campaign to stop what the state government of the day, which was a Liberal government, I think it was Ted Baillieu, they were trying to do infill in the flat. So get rid of all the green space and fill it with private housing. So no more soccer pitch for kids to play on, no more green space. So the community rallied together to fight against this, and they won. And one of the reasons, or what the organisers, some of the organisers in that campaign have told us, is what was really helpful is AGRA actually had the whole of, I think it was the bottom of one of the flats on Brunswick Street. They had that whole area, and they've had it since the 60s as AGRA's space. So residents could go there. They had events there. They did services there.
Yes, exactly.
And then as soon as they won that campaign, and I think just after one of the leaders passed away, the ALP took that space off them. And it really affected the community and their ability to organise.
All the youth in the area as well. Yes. Very much well attended by all the youth people in that area there.
And the reason it was so successful goes back to what you were saying, Unc. They maintained their independence. They never were funded by state government.
Big mistake.
That's what allowed them to be so fierce and independent and maintain that space for so long. And then ALP were just really dodgy and took that spot away from them when one of their leaders passed away. And now that space...
There's such beautiful little areas there that have been, and, the most vulnerable people have been associated with these places. So they target these places. But if we lose them places there, it's going to be so sad. But we just can't let it happen, right, Arku?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because Friday was way too special, Unc.
Yes.
That community festival, the North Richmond Community Festival that Belgium Avenue put on and you put on, that was so much fun.
Yes.
And we got, it rained, and then all of a sudden the sun came out and everyone was out playing soccer on the grass oval there, or we came back inside into the factory to listen to your band play. And
we've got to have much more of those things. Let's keep doing them. I was talking to Sally and you've got me saying Sally now.
Yeah. There is a
Sally
as well.
Yes.
And Lydia.
Sunny and Lydia.
They're all keen to
continue to do stuff like that.
I've got one more update before we wrap up, if that's okay,
because
it's important.
It's your show.
But Oasis. Well, it is called Oasis, but I'll start it differently. So when we've been organising out of the St Kilda flats as well, all seven of the flats have just been announced. But just around the corner from the St Kilda high rise on Inkerman Street, there's a block of a mix of private and community housing there, and it's called Oasis. And there was an arrangement in place, I think, about 20 years ago. The council owned this block of land, and then they gave it to, or they sold it at a really low price to a property developer on the proviso that they provided 28 community housing units there, and which I think they did do. Or there's 25 units there now, and the residents who were moved into community housing there were told that this was going to be their forever home. It's affordable. It's new. Well, it's community housing, so it was, I think, 30% of their income, and they were told they'd live there for the rest of their life. And then just earlier last month, they were all told that their property, their units were being sold, and they were being sold because the community housing provider, Housing First, could no longer afford to run this place. And I guess what we can learn from that is you're in so much more housing precarity, and you're kind of at the mercy of what the market dictates when you move into community housing. You could get evicted at any moment, despite what they tell you when you move in. And it's not the same as public housing. When you're in public housing, they have to find public housing for you. So it's really, I think we're talking to people over at Oasis now and trying to understand what the process has been like for them, but it's very similar to what people have experienced before, in that, again, these people are being told that they've only got two options to choose from of where to move out to, and if they don't pick one of those, they'll end up on the street. So yeah, just to wrap up, what has happened to a lot of people who've moved into community housing is that if something happens, or if the provider decides that they can no longer afford to rent out your house's community housing and it's more profitable to have it privatised, they can and they will do it, and they have just done it over in St Kilda. So it's really important that people understand what community housing actually is, and how, I guess, insecure their right to housing is when they move over there before they make a decision to move there. And that's partly what we do too. It's we go out there and we speak to people and educate them and put them in touch with residents who have been moved into community housing, so they can speak to people firsthand and learn from their experience.
Thank you so much, RQ, for that update. And we'll have to get you in soon again. Mm-hmm. But what can you leave us with, and what's coming up in the near future that we should be aware of? And how can people get involved with 44FU?
Yeah. So we've actually just launched our associate membership drive, because obviously we won't receive any funding. We just got a small grant recently to do work with young people. But apart from that, we're all completely self-funded.
Also, you just launched your new website.
We launched our new website, and our T-shirt will be up online soon.
Is that beautiful T-shirt that you That's a beautiful T-shirt.
Yes, yeah, the one that I drew. That's got you in it too, Unc, scooting just in front of your fire pit. Yeah, that we'll have that available online for sale. I think in the next week, Dust Automat are working with us to produce that, which is really great. But we'll have that up. But join us, become a member if you're a resident, get involved in one of the estates and organise with residents there. There's a growing base in each of the estates of residents who really want to resist this, find out more, talk to their neighbours. And yeah, becoming a member of 44FU is a really big part of what you can do to support resident-led initiatives to fight back against the demolitions. And we, of course, work with so many other groups as well, and we have to, especially in this election year as well. We've got to be really strategic about how we leverage the state election to our advantage.
Okay. And when's that coming up?
The 28th of November, I think, is election day. Yes. But yeah, we can become a member through our website or through our Instagram. And yeah, that's to make sure that resident-led collective action can be achieved. So it's just to cover costs like printing and food for events, or taxis when we need them.
All right, make sure I'm signed up.
You already have.
I'm done.
Okay, yeah, you're great. You're already a member. Thanks, Unc.
Well, yeah, fantastic, RQ. Thanks so much.
Yes, thanks for having me.
And
I'll come back on again soon.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. To listen to a full audio of Bunjil's Fire radio show, a historically informed critical analysis of Aboriginal affairs and the ongoing political movement for land rights, treaty, sovereignty and the cessation of genocide, go to 3cr.org.au/Bunjil's Fire. If you want to support independent black media on 3CR, please go to www.3cr.org.au For more information and to donate online.